Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue in downtown Milwaukee, it's time to Fast Forward. Welcome to the future of almost everything in Wisconsin on the upswing. Joining WTMJ's Jeff Sherman, here's Steve Glenn and Martin Moore.
Good morning, Wisconsin. Good morning, Milwaukee. As always, the Thursday show, the future of almost everything in the state of Wisconsin through a business, community, and life lens. Specifically for today's show, we're going to get into the opening of the Baird Center, what it means for the future of conventions in Milwaukee, the future of traffic. There's some really interesting technology innovations that may be coming to our state. The future of Red Lobster. You got to talk about Red Lobster. The future of the Walker's Point neighborhood, one of the hottest developing areas just outside of downtown Milwaukee. Some big changes coming to National Avenue. We're going to talk about the future of baby names if we can get there. And you listen to the end of the show. I got a little bit of a scoop on a scoop place out in Delafield. I'll give you that. You listen to the end of the show. Let's get right into it. Steve Glenn, the Chief Milwaukee Officer at Experience Milwaukee. Martin Moore, content creator, podcaster, YouTuber, and all things marketing. The future's so bright. You got to wear shades. I want to start with this. I'm working on a kind of a future of eye care and what's coming in the technology space with glasses and contacts. I saw this on Bloomberg today, that fully darkened or reflective sunglass lenses have been the industry standard for ages. But now there's a new movement in eyewear that champions lenses that are just slightly tinted, translucent enough for others to see through while still providing the necessary level of shade and ultraviolet protection for the person wearing them. The Hollywood sect is all over this. Matthew McConaughey, Robert Downey Jr. are wearing sunglasses that are translucent. Martin, you're a big sunglass guy.
That's an understatement.
What are your thoughts on this?
He wears them to sleep.
I do, all right. I mean, eye care, it's important. You know, your eyes are one of the most important organs in your... Eye's an organ, right? I'm pretty sure. It's an important one. I don't know if I like the... That seems kind of creepy, like the translucent... When I used to have sunglasses, because like as I've gotten older, my eyes have gotten super sensitive to light. So like, thanks, Mom. I have to wear sunglasses all the time, even here in the studio. The fluorescent lighting like hurts my eyes. But like, I don't want to see your eyes through that. That's just weird.
Right? Why?
I don't know.
You're wearing the sunglasses for the protection, right?
Yeah.
But
I don't know. They're a fashion statement without a doubt. But
they kind of are. Yeah. I'd be lying if I said I also don't enjoy like the fashion aspect of wearing them. But I don't want to see your eyes. It's just, it's bizarre to me.
So what do you think about regular glasses when you can see people's eyes?
That's fine. It's the it's like you're hiding from me. Like you're behind one of them two-way mirrors. It's either I want to see your eyes completely or I don't want to see them at all. But like this weird 50-50, I don't know. It's bizarre. I've never liked it. To each their own, but
exactly.
I'm not a fan.
Well, and I think that's the thing with the sunglass trend that's coming. People kind of expect not to see your eyeballs when you're wearing the sunglasses. Let's just stick with that. I don't know. What about the daily wear contacts?
I wear contacts.
And do you
daily.
Have the blue light filtering in that?
100%.
And do you find that that's helpful staring at a screen all day?
I don't know because I've never had contacts without it.
Ah, okay.
So,
all right. It's fairly new to me, and I don't know if I'm noticing a big difference because it's never really been a huge challenge, but I like that the innovation is there.
Yeah.
And it doesn't add any discomfort to the contact lens.
Right.
I just don't like touching my eye, so I don't.
Do you remember the first time you had to put a contact lens in when you were at the eye doctor?
No.
And you're sitting in front of that mirror for like 38 minutes, like just trying to get the thing in, dropping it, washing it off, trying it again. Oh, my God. And now I can do it in bed. I'll be like, oh, I forgot to take them out, and I'll just be like,
that's right. You know, everything. You just build those reps, and you get better and better.
Right.
It'll be interesting and hopeful in a couple of weeks we'll have somebody from one of the big eye care providers on the show to talk about what's coming in terms of technology. Whenever I go to the eye doctor, I want to just say, hey, why can't I just float the lenses in front of my eyes?
Would you ever get LASIK? It's been out for a minute.
It's been out for a long time. Yeah, I've had many friends and colleagues that have had good success with it, but I'm just not there yet.
I've watched the YouTube videos of it being done, and like every time I watch it, I'm like, eh, I'm not doing it.
Yeah. All right. When we come back from the break, the Baird Center completion of its $456 million expansion officially opens tonight with a celebratory ribbon-cutting ceremony and grand opening gala. We'll preview that event and talk about what it means for the future of conventions in Milwaukee. This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing, as always. The future of almost everything with Martin Moore and Steve Glenn. The Baird Center's completion of its expansion, the $456 million expansion, officially opens tonight with a celebratory ribbon cutting and grand opening gala. Just to give you a little context, 52 state-of-the-art breakout rooms, 300,000 contiguous square feet of exhibition state and exhibition space, and essentially doubling its capacity to 1.3 million total square feet. But I want to put it also in context. As we're looking to bring more conventions to the Milwaukee area, you look at Las Vegas, it's 2.5 million square feet. So, wow. You know, we're still not a marquee market, but at the same time, if we're going to lure more conventions to town, you got to have more space and you got to be able to accommodate. What does the expansion mean in terms of economic development for the area, Steve?
Tremendous, right? Like the shows that come here, the conventions, all these people that move around the city in that area and even further out, I think it helps all the restaurants and bars. And even, you know, just at a very basic level, just walking around over in the area lately, people have more pride in that street because it just looks amazing.
Yeah. The architectural kind of awe factor now at the Baird Center is there. And you didn't have that with the original building. It was unique in a Milwaukee style,
right.
But it just didn't have that wow. And now you have a wow factor, which is great. I mean, you look at this weekend alone, the big gala tonight, I think there's 1,100 people attending. But you have a Grand Slam volleyball tournament that will have 35 courts. UWM has their graduation this weekend. The World Environmental and Water Resources Congress is here. Boys and Girls Clubs has a big salute to youth event on Monday. And Admirals Hockey is back in town at the UWM Panther Arena that's owned by the Wisconsin Center District that runs the Baird Center. So the activity level is super hot. And you look forward to growing that and bringing in even more industry conventions to town. Do you go to CES?
I never have, but I've really, really, really wanted to.
Okay, so the annual Consumer Electronics Show
is amazing.
The biggest convention in the country.
Yeah.
And what I always say, like, either one of you have organizations and associations that you're a part of that could bring their convention to Milwaukee, and do you think that's a responsibility of business leaders to do so?
I think if you can nudge someone, it's always great. But we have a whole team over at Visit Milwaukee that do a great job bringing these organizations into our city.
Yeah, that's right. And they work really well with the team at the Baird Center to lure conventions. And you look at what's happening at the end of the summer, which will be huge. We have a summer full of bookended industry conventions, but Connect Marketplace 2024 is coming to town at the end of August. And that will welcome meeting planners from across the entire country to come to Milwaukee to showcase our new facility. And that's
awesome.
Going to be huge.
Yeah. Hey, I did want to mention in the list of things you shared, there is also for the public an open house on Saturday, May 18th from 1 to 5.
Yes. And that'll be the first time you'll be able to walk through the general public from 1 to 5. Also, you'll be able to see the 41 new original pieces of art. That artwork is brought to you by the We Energies Foundation Collection. So there's a lot of new art. There's a little new beer garden. There's some really interesting things to see. And you should come out. I mean, it's like the opening of a new arena.
Yeah,
big time.
Without a doubt. So when we come back, I want to talk, well, how about we think about it right now? What is your pitch to get conferences to come to Milwaukee? And what are your key talking points? And is traffic a good thing? And what technology is going to get us through traffic as we continue to move forward in this new economy? This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to the Upswing, the future of almost everything. Steve Glenn, Martin Moore joining us. We're talking about the expansion of the Baird Center. A bit of trivia here. You look back to 1996, and a young Jeff Sherman was working for a lobbying firm, and we worked to get the Wisconsin Center District created. And one of my jobs was to make sure that the celebrity who was doing the groundbreaking had the right shovel and to get it engraved in his name. You have any idea who that was?
I'm more intrigued about where you get an engraved shovel than the individual was.
Right around the corner on Old World 3rd Street.
Yeah.
There's a trophy shop.
Does a lot of them, and there's a couple others in town, yes.
How do you know this?
Oh, it's a big part of what I did. Events and public relations events. So Reggie White was the big name back in 1996, and I got to hand Reggie White his shovel. Here, Mr. White, here's your shovel. And you know, that's my claim to fame.
Did he give you a club?
Yeah.
Now get out of my
way. In the full circle moment, you fast forward like 15, 20 years, I was a board member at the Wisconsin Center District. So I started by handing a shovel to Reggie Wright, and then I got a seat at the table. It's kind of cool. I've been searching all over. I got to go back to Miller Communications, my boss, Carl Miller, at the time.
This was the good old days when cell phones didn't have cameras.
Yes, they'll have some old school photos of that event. But it's great to see the completion come to life because this was a phased project, and now you know, we're going to be able to kind of get all the glory of having a ton of new square feet that will result in the ability to have two conferences at the same time, which is one thing the Baird Center wasn't able to do. You can move in, you can move out, and you get the flow of the business moving and shaking. Yeah. So if you are pitching a company to come to Milwaukee for a convention, what are your two top talking points?
For me, a big one is location. You know, you think about something like CES in Las Vegas. Everyone on the East Coast has to fly 3.5-4 hours to get there. Or if there's something in New York and you live on the West Coast in L.A., San Francisco, it's a long flight. Milwaukee is very centrally located in the United States, so it's an easy destination to get to. And then another one would be just the affordability. I mean, I suppose they jack prices up, but still, it's going to be cheaper for hotels, for dining, for transportation, just to entertainment after the conferences to go out than it would be if you were in LA or Vegas or Chicago or something like that.
Yeah.
So I think those are two really big ones.
Yeah.
I agree. And I'd add one more thing that I personally love. Every place tries to keep the patio open as long as possible, right. So you have that kind of innovation going on, too.
Yeah, and kind of adding the rooftop deck, almost a beer garden-type space at the Baird Center, it's a true drawing point and something other big conventions centers just don't have.
Right.
So you got to lean into what we do best, and that ability to get from here to there in a quick, efficient manner, even without maybe not the best public transit, but it's continuing to get better in a market our size, that's a big drawing point, too. You look at Chicago, that you got to get across
a lot of square footage
to go from the hotel to the McCormick Center and back and forth to get to your event. So in terms of making a city easy to move around, the future of traffic flow is pretty important. Fast Company is out with its world-changing ideas issues, and Empath is one of them. Empath is an app that measures your heart rate when you're in traffic, and then uses that data to deliver it to cities to try to solve traffic conundrums. It uses fitness tracker data to record when you see spikes in heart rates and to indicate stress levels, and then cities purchase that data to say, whoa, here's a clog. We need to solve for that. Martin, this just seems like something that's right up your lane.
I just wonder how they attribute your rising heart rate to, like, traffic congestion. Like, what if I'm, like, listening to one of my favorite songs and I'm, like, jamming out? Or I'm on a phone call and, like, you know, I'm in a fight with my significant other or something like that. That seems like a really hard thing to create a...
correlation?
Yeah, a correlation. Yeah. Or a sort of a bifurcation between, like, traffic congestion and you're angry and the millions of other things that stress people out. That'll be interesting to see how they do that.
So the engineering and design firm that developed it, he saw a point in the Netherlands. He was a bike commuter, and he felt the less stress when, you know, the roads were done right and had more green space the bike lane. So he's like, hey, can we create a business around this to detect when people are stressed and how we can get them out of dangerous spots? And can cities leverage that data
to make roads even safer.
Yeah. I don't know. My wife had to drive me to and from work for a few days when my son had my car. And she makes fun of me that, like, I drive really slow. I take the side streets instead of the freeway. And I said to her, this is my time to unwind on the way home and not come walk through the door stressed. I think it's a personal choice on how you want to drive. I mean, I had a guy driving in the paint. I was just minding my own business. He opened his door to flip me off because his windows were tinted. And I'm like, come, like, why? Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I take the lakefront for that reason, though, like, just because it's so soothing and cathartic.
Yes.
Like, most of the time I'll take, if I'm not in a rush, I'll take the lakefront to get downtown.
It is your choice.
Yeah. That's right. All right. So there's the second app that came in place in this Fast Company survey is an Airbnb for EV chargers.
I think this is really cool.
I love it.
Isn't it?
This is cool. Called Plug In with two N's.
Yeah.
And it's designed to work like Airbnb for EV charging. Drivers take a road trip. They can schedule stops at private chargers along the route. Homeowners can make some money by listing their chargers. So if you're out and about in your EV and you need a place to stop that's not public, you go to Plug In and say, boom, I'm going to stop in. I'm going to say hello. And I'm going to use your charging station in your garage. I don't have a full charging station for my electric car, but I'd be happy to list it and have people stop by and get a charge. Why not?
Have a sandwich, use your bathroom, get out.
Right. That's right. That's what community building is all about. So those are the two big traffic apps that Fast Company noted. Let's bring them to Wisconsin and let's continue to leverage all that they have. Welcome back to The Upswing. Martin Moore, Steve Glenn, join us. The future of almost everything. Quick note on the Baird Center that you just heard in news. Expansion has drawn the interest of a ton of new events. In April, Marty Brooks, the CEO of the Baird Center, told the Milwaukee Business Journal that they had 108 confirmed events in the center's North Building through 2030 and 212 events holding dates for bookings in the North Building through 2032. So already, without
that's
a doubt,
that's cool.
Dividends.
Are any of them Star Wars or video game related? Because I really need that to come to Milwaukee.
Lots of expansion in the gaming and video game space convention-wise, for sure. Milwaukee will be a big player in that.
I think it will.
Yeah, without a doubt. So the restaurant that my grandparents always took us to, the Red Lobster on Mayfair Road in beautiful tree-lined Wauwatosa, has closed. So there's no future talk about that place because it seems like it's closed. And if you look at the Wall Street Journal today, they're saying Red Lobster's probably going to apply for bankruptcy, it seems.
What is...
So the biggest U.S. seafood restaurant is preparing to file Chapter 11, closed two locations in Wisconsin. There's one still open. You know where that is?
By Southridge?
Southwards.
That one's still open?
Yes.
Boy,
yes.
I thought that
I saw
like
on Twitter and X last night that the parking lot was pretty full and people are still going.
It's always packed.
Like the last Blockbuster.
Yes.
It's been interesting to watch, sort of. You know, back when we were kids, you had Ponderosa and Applebee's and TGI Fridays and Red Lobster and all these massive sort of restaurant chains that weren't like a McDonald's or a Taco Bell or a Hardee's. And it's been interesting watching them decline and, you know, slowly start to go out of business. And I wonder what it is, because if people aren't eating there, then where are they eating? Is this just getting gobbled up by lots of local chains, or, you know, what, why is this happening? You know, because people like lobster, people like steak. So why are they not gravitating towards some of these places? Why are they struggling? It's not like the prices are expensive. I mean, you go to Olive Garden and you basically have to like kill them to take your money. Red Lobster, you get all kinds of free stuff. So why do you think that is?
Yeah, it seems there's a lot of different struggles, without a doubt. You know, high interest rates on debt and just a general slowdown in consumer spending, without a doubt. And the investors are kind of cutting back on the food investments.
Sure.
So
lobster, like, probably not a good choice.
Right. You know, it's a little bit more expensive to acquire. So you got to charge the consumer.
Sometimes
more.
I like to go on a Tuesday night and just like go to Red Lobster, get a lobster, and then just like Goldschlagers, like just a nice little glass. And that just has some golden lobster for dinner.
Oh, boy. What is the deal with the biscuits? I don't get it.
They're delicious.
All right.
Oh, my God.
All right.
You can get you can buy the biscuits
and like walk out.
Pick and Save or Sendix or something like that.
It's not the same.
Yeah. They're fantastic, though. Yeah. Treat yourself.
It's just that high-end fast casual dining experience is tough, especially when you have, you know, the Chipotles and the Sweetgreens of the world, where for 12, ish. 11 bucks, yeah. you can get something super high end and get it quicker.
Do you think that's where people are going?
I think that's probably the choice the consumer's making.
Sure.
Yeah, because it's quicker, it's easier, and especially people are time crunched. They want it quick, fast, and friendly.
Do you think ever since COVID, more people are cooking at home and that's contributing to it? Or is that a dumb
I don't know.
Theory?
There's also food delivery, too.
Yeah, food delivery is a big one.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we talked about the food delivery apps and how important those are in people's lives. So
you can get, you can get lobster delivered to your house?
Yes. You can.
You know?
Biscuits. Do you?
I don't.
Now I kind of want to.
All right. We will add that to the list. I want to, when we come back from the break, pivot a little bit to TV. The upfronts are this week, and advertising executives and TV networks, platforms, and media companies, they're looking to mix and match and find their best fits, preview programming, and talk deals. But what does the future of advanced audiences and streaming look like? Coming up next on The Upswing, this is WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing, the future of almost everything. What's on TV for many Americans and all of us across the good state of Wisconsin? It's now YouTube. People spent nearly 10% of their TV viewing time watching the service, home to videos and creators like Mr. Beast and Martin Moore.
Moore.
Oh, man. I don't even think I've made a vlog this year yet. I'll have to go back and check.
So the when you look at from an advertising fit, it's all about advanced audiences and finding kind of the riches in niches. And that's what the appeal for a lot of the streaming services have for marketers and advertisers. Mm-hmm. But when you look at from a subscription standpoint, do you think the rise of YouTube TV is the death of traditional TV?
I mean, it could be. Traditional TV's free. Are you talking about like over the air?
Yeah, over the air. And
I mean, you can't
cable.
Beat free.
Right, yeah.
Cable is, I'm a little upset with how this is all played out. I'm gonna go on a quick little diatribe.
Okay, that's good.
All we did as a population was complain about how expensive cable was and nothing was on demand and blah, 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 and all this stuff. And we're like, well, I just want to buy HGTV and I just want to buy this and that. And, you know, I can save some money. Well, now we're paying more for Disney Plus, Netflix,
exactly.
Hulu, all right. that stuff, ESPN. We're paying more than we ever did for cable, and it's kind of frustrating. They really got us.
They really did, yes.
But you get what you want when you want it.
Yeah.
And that's hugely valuable for
totally.
People.
Yeah.
If you want the content, you want to consume it on your time, you're going to pay for it. But what's coming, the bundling services from the competitors, the traditional competitors now are partnering to say, hey, for this fee, you can get all three of us for the price of one. And a model, obviously, the cable companies loved years ago.
Right.
So that's something we'll all dive into. So what services do you pay for and where do you find the most value?
Hulu, Disney, Netflix, Peacock, you name it, we have it.
Oh, my gosh.
Apple TV, we've got we've got a lot of them.
So you look at the new Nielsen numbers, and streaming is now 38.4%, cable at 29.1%, and then broadcast at 22.2%, and other is about 10%.
Mm-hmm. Other.
But it goes Disney. Obviously, Disney is ESPN, ABC, so a big company there. YouTube, NBC Universal, Paramount, Nat Geo, Netflix, Fox, and Prime Video down at 3.2%.
Netflix is that low now?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But still a pretty large audience that has some quality programming.
Netflix has ended a lot of their really, really good IP, like Orange is the New Black, House of Cards, what was the that alien one or whatever with the monsters, Stranger Things.
Yeah.
Like, there's just a lot of, I haven't watched Netflix in, God, a year maybe, other than Love is Blind.
My five-year-old watches it all the time.
Netflix?
Yeah, and the kids stuff, yeah.
Well, and the big change, it's not change, but obviously YouTube incentivizes the the content creation, sharing 55% of the revenues with creators. So,
which is huge.
And now they're going to look to create more of their own programming and win awards on a big level too to compete with the big guys. And they're already number one. So,
right.
You know, let's continue to grow at Alphabet and Google because we're already here. Bring it to us. We want to consume more content. Although the word content, I say this all the time.
I hate that word.
I never sit down and say, all right,
let's check out the content tonight.
What content should we consume tonight? But it's an industry word that we love. When we come back for the final segment, I want to talk about the future of Walker's Point and what's coming to National Avenue, because there's a lot happening there. It's a great, growing, wonderful neighborhood. This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. It's WTMJ's Jeff Sherman. Let's give away a gift card to the Mineshaft restaurant in either Hartford or Oshkosh. The Sherman family, we live in the North Shore, but the Mineshaft in Hartford is a staple, easy for us to get the kids out of our attic and into the $2 million huge game room. Great pizza. Mom and Dad can sit at the bar and enjoy some conversation as we hang out as a family, but know that the kids can go up to the game room and hang out on their own, too. Caller number 8 at 855-616-1620 gets a gift card to the historic Mineshaft. And a friendly reminder that Thursdays, that's today, feature buy one, get one free pizza. Back on the TV discussion, producer Charlie reminding us that Netflix has landed a 3-year NFL deal to stream the Christmas Day games. Kind of, you know, I'm a NBA hoops fan, as I know you are, Martin, too. Like, streaming tier one live sports, that's where the viewership is. And
yes,
it's going to be huge for Netflix and the NFL.
I think Amazon buying Bally Sports Wisconsin was a big, big thing in getting into that space.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, live sports are still that one thing that people rally around, especially on holidays.
Yep.
And you're going to have huge audiences and you're going to get a ton of new subscribers.
And we'll pay ridiculous amounts of money like me to get access
the game.
To it.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
All right. There is $25 million plus coming to Milwaukee Southside, to one of the city's hottest new neighborhoods, Walker's Point. A ton of new restaurants, apartments, even a few condos.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. The condo development scene in greater downtown has kind of subsided, but there's a few new ones on the south side. So the City of Milwaukee Department of Works and the Wisconsin Department of Transportation are planning to replace West National Avenue all the way from South 39th Street to South 1st Street.
Yes.
It's nearly 3 miles.
Wow.
Make it more friendly, an urban 4-lane road. We're going to remove and replace a bunch of deteriorated pavement, all curb and gutters, driveway approaches, sidewalks, and make it much more of a street for people and not only cars. But that's a huge investment.
I love it. It's big. I didn't realize it was that large or that long of an area that they were doing.
Yeah. And you look at safety and our earlier talk about driving, you want to lower the speed limits, too. So
right.
You need more discovery items along the way, and especially such a gateway street that is a interior way to get into downtown, into the lakefront. National Avenue is truly important. Also coming, a new public plaza at the Zocalo Food Park that is a part of a TIF district that was created back in 2016 for an apartment complex there. So there's going to be improvements to a skate park right underneath I-94. New neighborhood projects, $8 million in a new city plan that will expand and create even more entertainment and access along National Avenue. Steve, you hang out in the area a lot, right?
I spend way too much time on 1st and 2nd Streets over on 5th and 6th in Walker's Point. It's not even funny.
Yeah,
so I love that neighborhood. I love the vibe. I love the people, the places. You still can feel like they're, like I was in La Pina last night, which is probably on the edge, right, of Bayview and Walker's Point.
Yeah.
And you still feel like you kind of know some things that other people don't know when you're hanging out there, but it's gonna change quickly.
Yeah, I mean, there's 75 distinct neighborhoods in the city, and Walker's Point is the oldest neighborhood dating back to the 1830s. So to continue to see it grow and shine, and there's still some you know, Mexican-American owned bars that are have been in there for 30, 40 years that are still a signature part of the neighborhood, which
love
is
it.
Great to see. All right. I had teased a little bit of a scoop, if you will, and I want to give you this. It's not a huge deal, but what's your favorite place for ice cream in the area quickly?
Purple Door.
Purple Door. All right.
I don't really eat ice cream.
No,
I would probably say Purple Door.
Okay, well,
seeing as that's the only place that I've been to twice in the last 15 years.
All right, well, if you know Mullins Dairy Bar, big locations in the Lake Country area, they'll be opening in Delafield, the Smiley Barn on I-94 and Highway 83. It was announced a couple weeks ago or a couple months ago, but the owners tell me that they're looking at late May. Early June, they're going to announce a specific date very soon. So the Smiley Barn will have ice cream. Everyone loves the Smiley Barn.
Yeah.
You drive past it and you just get happy. That's what it's all about. That's what we're all about here. The future of almost everything. The future of ice cream coming to the Smiley Barn. Steve Glenn, Martin Moore joining us.